The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 495. I am your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
I thought you were going to say back from the depths of Detroit. Yo.
Yeah, and Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
All right, you already know, back with another one. And yes, Chris is back from the depths of Detroit. RoboCop did not kill him. Very happy about that. Did we tell people that Chris was, like, stuck, right? Because of the whole CrowdStrike bullshit? Yeah. Man, Chris, that's nuts, bro.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to catch a plane, and then Clarence Boddicker told bitches leave. You know, everybody left, and like, oh, we can't fly the plane now. Like,
fuck.
Yeah. And that went on for a few days.
It's insane. Delta is still having issues with all of this shit.
Yo, I don't think Delta is going to exist by the end of the year, man. There's people ramping up lawsuits and shit. Atlanta's the worst. Atlanta, their hub, yeah, that shit, it looks like third world stuff going on in the air. People sleeping in the airport and stuff. It's awful. I got lucky. I got Southwest. Southwest was working there. They got one Commodore 64 running their ticketing system, and that shit works. So I got out of there.
Man. Yeah, I mean, Delta might go the way of Pan Am, you know? So.
Oh, yeah.
No.
That's crazy.
I sent a video to you guys on the Twitter chat.
Twitter.
If you know, like, if you have access to the computer, you can easily fix the issue. I showed a video how to do it. It's like, man, if I gave this to Chris and South or Delta gave them access to the
computer, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, Chris, yeah, let me fix that real quick.
I think the biggest thing about a lot of this is that a lot of especially work computers are all locked down. So anybody who has a work computer has to, you know, they have to have the admin do it, come in and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you could do it on your own computer if you have this program in there, but. And those guys, they can't do it. So I'm guessing Rich isn't going to be back in Georgia anytime soon because of this.
Why are critical systems running on Windows? That's my question.
Critical systems working on Windows? And why does something like this company have the ability to run in zero mode?
Yeah,
like it's like literally in the kernel. You know,
there's a golden rule. Developers, IT guys, they all know it. You don't push an update on a Friday. You never do. So somebody there broke the golden fucking rule. It's like the first commandment of IT.
Man,
that shit is crazy. But you know, glad you're back, and we're here. So this was an interesting weekend gaming. It's been an interesting couple of weeks in the world, but we're not getting into that here. CrowdStrike was among that. It's like, yo, can we not have historical shit happen for one weekend, please? Yeah. It's insane. Every weekend it's something, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into it, man. We got to talk about Concord. Nobody played it. Nobody played this trash. You know, that's pretty much it, man. So over on Steam, the beta, the peak player count. Well, you know what? Let's have some fun. What do you guys think was the peak player count for this game, for the beta?
Man. I don't know, 600 people tops.
Oh, you're really low balling. just for context, Helldivers 2, and we're going to talk about this later. Helldivers 2 saw its lowest concurrent players at 10,000. This is far less than that. It was 2,388 players. That was the most amount of people playing it at the same time ever. Absolute train wreck. Like, I know there's a bunch of, I'm just gonna just say it, but you know what? I'll be nice. There are certain people advocating for it. Look a little silly right now, you know? But yeah, I'm not surprised by this. Like, ever since this game was announced, I knew it was gonna bomb. The character designs look fucking ugly. It was another Overwatch ripoff. No enthusiasm for this whatsoever. This shit was the definition of dead on arrival, among other things I'm not going to get into. So none of this shit surprises me, you know? Definitely one of those situations where the media is out there, like, rah-rahing this fucking game, and the player's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to go over here instead, you know. And you know, on the flip side, I think I got this on the show notes too. This fucking Marvel game, Marvel Rivals, right? You know, which is a similar type of Overwatch ripoff game, right? This shit had a big turnout compared to this trash, you know. Not surprising, it's a Marvel game, you know. But it had 52,000 players, you know.
Uh-huh. And that's a free one too, isn't it?
It's a free beta, I believe. Yeah. So there you go, people. So Rich, I know you got to be disappointed by this. I know this was, you know, your game of the year, but it seems it's going to bomb.
Well, I don't have an issue with this. I believe Carlos and Chris are the ones that they were heartbroken to hear this news.
You know, I didn't get to boost those numbers because I was stuck.
You know,
Strike and Delta for that.
Yes.
Yeah, but seriously, what do you think about, you know, are you surprised by this?
I'm not surprised. I know a lot of people, I've saw a lot of people complain about this particular game. There was some that also did enjoy it, but I wasn't impressed with any of the footage that I saw. And of course, I'm still out of town visiting family, so I haven't had a chance to really play any games. But I'm not really surprised about how it turns out. I will, however, say this. For Marvel Rivals, that is a closed beta, which means everyone doesn't have access to it. So to hear those numbers is pretty ridiculous. Because they're not giving out codes to just anybody. You know, we do have Gary, who was actually has been playing the game on PC. But yeah, it's not open to everybody yet. This is supposed to be a closed beta, and it's going up until for like another week or so. So I'll be curious to see how those numbers look as the days go by.
Yeah, for sure. I know Gary's been enjoying that Marvel game. And, you know, big Overwatch fan, obviously, so not surprised there. But even Gary wasn't fucking around with this Concord bullshit, you know? Gary was like, I'm good. You know, because Gary, he's a man of taste, you know, so he wouldn't be caught dead playing trash like Concord, you know? Blitz like, leave Concord alone. Remember that Britney thing? Leave Concord alone. But he goes, yeah, it was destined to bomb. Jay Shep goes, Marvel Rivals did to Concord what Helldivers do did to Foam Stars. But remember that game, Flop Stars, man? They didn't do nothing. Nothing for nobody, you know?
Was Foam Stars considered one of the service games that PlayStation was talking about?
No, because that's a Square Enix game, isn't it? Or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's also an exclusive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure.
I'm wondering if did PlayStation pay Square Enix for an exclusive, and they did that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But Manny, get in here, man. What do you think about this Concord? Specifically, you know, the whole character design, you being an artist and all, professional artist.
You know, the thing, his thing, like, I it's a weird thing. So when it looked like it was going to be a story thing, the character design didn't bug me. You know what I mean? Like, because it seemed like, okay, we got all kinds of crazy looking, like, we have weird looking characters. Some of them look ugly, some of them, like, okay. I feel like in a story mode, if you have characters that sort of don't look so iconic, it's okay, especially if the personalities are strong. But then once they said it was a service game, then it essentially you got to see the weakness of the designs. So it's like, and when you look at those characters, like, what do you get from them? Like, I feel like there are factors in character design that are attractive, right? So you look at all the characters in Overwatch. They're all being diverse characters, right? You know, they have black characters, they have white characters, they have Asian characters, you know, etc., Hispanic. But each character has a theme to them. And I think that's what's the biggest thing that's missing from a lot of these from these Concord characters is they don't have a look that says to you, okay, I want to play that character. It just seems like they're just a bunch of characters just for the sake of characters. I feel like it maybe if you had those characters as NPCs, that's what it feels like. The game feels like it's made of NPCs that you see in the background. there are no main characters as playable characters. It just seems like they just took all the background character that you talk to at the shop and they put that character as a playable character, you know?
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I mean, even if you release Overwatch in today's world, I don't think those characters will be that iconic anymore because it feels like they've been overdone.
I mean, they've been overdone for the plain factor, the fact that they are. I think it's not that they're. I feel like it's not that they're overdone. It's more that they're a lot of the characters that are being created for these games. That includes the game, the flop that the guys at Ninja Theory did. That game, the characters in that game as well have the same problem where they don't catch the right they have unique silhouettes, but the problem is that they don't have a clean enough look or an attractive enough look for people to say, okay, I want to play this character. You know, like you look at all the characters in Overwatch, they're like, okay, wow, like, hey, look, there's a cowboy one, there's a kind of a cool looking like futuristic speedster girl. Like they all have some sort of cool theming to them. You know, one's a skater, you know, like he's got like rollerblades on. You know, like they're not overdone. You know, like in other words, they don't have a bunch of things all over their face or something like that. They're very clean designs, and I feel like that's key. If you want to do a sort of hero type of game like that, like as you know, obviously Marvel being the, you know, obviously having the install base, you already know who these characters are. But if you look at all the new designs that they did for those characters, they sort of made them their own and sort of created these sort of looks that, you know, identify it for this game. But also made them like sort of interesting. Okay, you know, Magneto's in the game, but he's got a little bit more going on than he did, you know, in the comic books or on the shows.
Vision's in this game. We got a durag.
Yeah, we got a durag.
Also, the other thing about Concord is it doesn't have a style. It's like hyper realistic looking characters. But if you notice, like a lot of the hero shooters, you know, Overwatch included, choose a more stylized, clean design. They are like hyper realistic people that don't really look that interesting.
Yeah. Yo, Carlos, that reminded me of Vishon, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's what they call them, you know, Durag Vision. Vishon. Hilarious, that dude, man.
I would play a video game that had that dude in it.
That'd be wild. Yeah. But go ahead, man. What do you think about this Concord bullshit?
Yeah, man. I mean, we have to talk about it because it's the biggest news out. But you know, for people like us, or for dudes like us, it's not a game that we're not interested in,
you know,
really. So the fact that people aren't really talking about sort of what the game is about, it's more about the characters, is pretty telling, you know, and the character designs and all that stuff. Because you know, you're trying to set yourself apart with a whole bunch of other titles that are pretty much do the same thing that you do. It's hard to stick out. So when you don't have, you know, the type of, you know, stylized art or characters or anything like that to complement your game, it's kind of hard to stand out towards against the crowd.
Yo, look at these numbers are wild, man. On July 19th, they saw, you know, again, these are all peak numbers for each day. July 19th was 1,654 players. July 20th, 1,447 players. And July 21st, 1,117 players. So, you know, they just aggregated all that together and you got 2,000, whatever. Wow, man. And it's a $40 game, you know? What happened?
Comparing those numbers to Helldivers 2, and I understand Helldivers 2 is a huge success.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just crazy that, you know, not even nowhere near close.
Yeah. And again, Helldivers is quote unquote failing right now because it has a little under 10,000. Think about that. And this shit's doing like, what is that? Less than, like, what, 2% of that? 20% of that? It's crazy. I'm not good with math, people. So, you know, forgive me. It's bad. But I'm not surprised. Trash games, man. But speaking about that, since we're talking about Helldivers, so yeah, that was the big news, that the game hit its lowest mark with like less than 10,000 players for the first time ever. And apparently its all-time peak was 458,709 players 5 months ago. Which, that's a lot of fucking people, you know? And I'm guessing, you know, because this game, very interesting, you know, how this game went, right? It's like not only an industry darling, but a critical darling. But as soon as PlayStation announced that whole linking with PSN, you know, those numbers plummeted. So pretty crazy stuff. And I'm wondering if the numbers are just going to keep going. I mean, I don't know how they can make it go back up unless, because it's just bad press now. Because they stopped that whole linking shit, didn't they? Like, didn't they kind of go back on that in the end? But I think the damage is already done, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the game, as we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, even before the whole ordeal with the PlayStation sign-in, the numbers were already going down. So, you know, that just created an even bigger crater for the game. So it really, I don't think anything is going to help it other than like DLC or an expansion pack type of thing. But I will say this, there is going to be a Helldivers 3 because the whatever success they did get made Sony a whole bunch of money.
Oh, yeah. You know, but Sony wanted more money and look what ended up happening, you know.
No bueno.
No es bueno, you know. By the way, the exact number, this is the all-time low, 9,796 players, which is still a hell of a lot better. Concord wish it had those numbers, you know?
So is Concord, because I remember Concord was out in beta form if you pre-ordered it.
Yeah.
Is it officially out now?
I'm not sure.
So maybe it could be one of those things where it's not fully released yet. Let me see, Concord.
Yeah, it's not coming out until August.
Hey, man, yeah, you know how you said, like, for something to bomb, it has to not make money. I guess you could say that, too. What if people aren't pre-ordering this thing, that could be considered bombing, too, you know?
Yeah, if there's no pre-orders, you're definitely going to, that means that there's not a lot of interest.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly what the pre-order numbers are these days.
Neither do I, yeah.
But I would say, like, yeah, that's not a good sign if people aren't pre-ordering in general, you know?
Yeah. GZDR, he goes, they are paying influencers to talk bad about the game. I don't know who they is.
Well, that was mentioned on the thread on your questions. Dude, like, it doesn't, I don't think they pay people for influencers to talk bad about the game. I think what they do is they pay influencers to play the game so that they can get people interested.
Yeah.
Influencers are just, you got to understand that influencers are just a advertising vector. They're just another part of advertising to people because obviously commercials and all that other junk is not doing, because people are mostly not watching commercials these days. You don't have like TV commercials because people don't watch commercials. So what do people willingly watch? Influencers. So you pay a couple of the more popular influencers to play it for like a week or two, and, you know, to pump interest. That's what they did with Ninja plenty of times.
Yeah.
And then if you ever notice, sometimes after a while, you'll notice that they'll just drop the game cold turkey, and you'll never see that game on their streams ever again.
By the way, that was one of my Miss Cleo moments with Ninja. When he went to, remember when he went to, was it Beam? I forgot the name of Mixer. When he went to Mixer, mm-hmm. I'm like, wait for this motherfucker. Come back to Mixer. Gonna play a whole bunch of Microsoft games.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, they paid him to go over to Mixer. There's no secret behind that.
Yeah, they paid him $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, they paid him $1 million.
They paid him to go to Mixer and to play Xbox games.
Yeah. I mean, and people keep saying that a lot of journalists are corrupt. Journalists don't make $1 million.
Yeah, they don't. Shit, that's
from
true.
From a fucking review.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hey, we're going to pay you $1 million to give our game a good review. That's fucking crazy.
No. That doesn't happen. And let's just say for the sake of argument. That's never happened. Let's just say for the sake of argument, if it were to happen and that's get discovered, that journalist would be promptly fired. You know? Meanwhile, with influencers, people are like, okay, that's what they do. That's what they are.
Yeah, that's what they do.
And let's just be honest here. Influencers, and I don't give a fuck, I'll say it, they are paid shills. You know?
Unless they're specifically funded by their Patreon, like in other words, they have a thing that they're just they make their money off of the, and there's quite a bit of influencers that work that way, where they're mostly funded by Patreon and they're mostly funded by their own fans. I would say those influencers are a lot more genuine when it comes to situations like that. But yeah, you hear a situation like Ninja getting paid $1 million to go to some dying fucking video service that Microsoft shit the bed on to try to attract people. What do you think that is? That's just to get you people to go out and go watch some Mixer, but they realize it didn't work. So Homeboy was just catching money. And then he just came back to Twitch, and then it was like nothing ever happened.
It's amazing. But yeah, so Helldivers, you know, its numbers keep diving, you know. The second half of what GZR said kind of leads us to the next topic, which is still related to this. He goes, No Man's Sky took 3 years to get good. Why abandon Concord so soon? This is actually something the Warframe developer said. He goes that he believes that publishers are, you know, hitting eject too soon on live service games. He goes, if it comes out, doesn't work, then they throw it away. And it's interesting to think about it. Warframe, when it first came out, you know, it did okay, but it took many, many years for it to, you know, build up to where you have a fucking convention for it, you know, TennoCon. So I understand where he's coming from. It's like his game benefited from having from just being out there so long, like, because they were independent. If Brian was here, he could tell us all this shit. He's the big Warframe guy. But they didn't have like a big publisher telling them what to do. So they were just out there. But it seems like big publishers, they want the next they want the next Fortnite. And if it doesn't, you know, hit immediately, they're done, you know.
But I think Warframe is also a unique situation because they didn't come out like shit.
No, they didn't. It was a good game.
There was genuine mm-hmm. interest in that title.
Yeah.
The question is, like, obviously, yes, you know, they throw the baby out with the bad bathwater when things don't come out so right. But you look at the Ninja Theory game, there was absolutely, again, just like Concord, there was absolutely no interest in there. So why should Microsoft keep supporting something that is not doing, that's barely doing any numbers?
Yeah. Also, to mention, since No Man's Sky was invoked, the creator of No Man's Sky hyped it to all hell, where everyone, including most of the Throwdown panel, bought the game and were disappointed by it. Mm-hmm. So they had a chance where they made a whole bunch of money and were able to fix everything afterwards. So
exactly. So like the interest was so high on there. Eventually, they worked their way into making the game, you know, making the game into everything that he had sort of promised in that initial thing. So, blessing in disguise. So, in other words, they essentially had the money already waiting there, just so they could, now they could, you know, bring themselves over the, what do they call it? Bring themselves over the finish line. But officially, if you think about it, No Man's Sky wasn't a finished game.
Yeah.
When they released it.
Yeah, but that is a good point. It's like the game made so much money. It had the time to, you know, become big. But yeah, no, I understand where he's coming from, but you are right. Warframe is a very unique situation, you know?
Yeah, Warframe is not...
And they also weren't
Warframe
riding the train of another game, you know? They were just doing their thing, you know? And it was good.
I mean, they are riding the rails of a service title, but they are so unique on their own end that it's hard to do a comparison to.
Yeah. Like, no, but remember, like, when it first came out, service titles weren't as big as they are now. Even Destiny is not fully out yet, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it was like kind of one of the first ones out there. So it also had that benefit. You know, it's like, oh, okay, you know, we're doing this now.
And then again, like, you know, there was a genuine interest in the game. Even Destiny had a lot of interest in it, and I feel it took it over the finish line. But officially, I would say that when the way Destiny launched, which was decent, it wasn't amazing. You know, it eventually earned its way up to being that way when they got rid of Peter Dinklage and they actually put the more work into it. But there was a lot of repetitiveness to it, and that's the thing. If the key to a lot of these services games is number one, initial interest, interest in the beginning, that, okay, these characters look cool, this is something I want to get, you know, being attractive to a player. And then also, if they have something that's working, if it's working out of the thing, you know, they can, you know, it's working, they can genuinely take the model can take it over. And they can fix all the issues or continue to support it, like in the case of, Warframe.
Yeah.
I want to mention something GZDR mentioned in the chat.
I know what you're talking about, too, because I was about to address that. Because I'm like, there's a little bit of revisionist history going on there, bud. Go ahead, Carlos.
You said Uncharted 1 sucked and got low reviews. No, it didn't, man.
No, it didn't.
Uncharted
no,
1 it didn't. Was a... huge critical success.
Not only huge critical success, but also financial success. Remember that came out, among other things, it stood out from the gray, muddy fucking games out there. People were like, oh shit, there's color in this game, you know, because every game was fucking dirt ugly. Like Gears, Gears of War, but you know, it was, you know, Gears of War, Resistance, Fall of Man, like they all had that kind of muddy, disgusting aesthetic. So you had this game, not only was it colorful, but it was fun, and it really showed off the power of the PS3. That game did very, very well. Like, you know, maybe I know he's saying like low Metacritic scores. Low Metacritic scores don't mean low sales, bro. You know, and I tell you, motherfuckers, a million times, don't look at those fucking Metacritic scores. They don't mean shit. You know, go ahead, man.
I would say for Uncharted, and he's definitely looking at the scores at the time, and I feel like a lot of the media reaction is very middling on it, where in other words it's like sixes and you know and maybe fives or something like that, right? But I think the thing about it is I think the gaming public, you know, the actual gamers actually spoke
the actual
on that
gamers, they loved that game.
Yeah,
you know, why do you think Sony made a second one? Because it sold well on a system that still wasn't selling. Remember PS3, that was around the time where it was still struggling, you know. That game dropped, it actually sold very, very well and actually started turning things around for that platform, you know.
And not to mention, the sequel got to address all the issues that people had with the previous one.
Yeah, and obviously so that's
the type of situation that you want, where you may get some weak reviews. That's fine, but if you're able to essentially pay in your investment and then some, and then pay for the sequel to sort of address all the issues that all the previous one had. So I wouldn't say that game was a bomb at all.
No, it wasn't. You know, don't look at the Metacritic scores. And because remember, you're talking to guys that lived it. We were there, you know. Yeah. I remember buying that game like 3 months after it came out. And that game came out in the same year. I call it the Cambrian explosion of gaming, 2007, you know. And obviously the fucking... Go ahead, Chris.
Well, just real fast, that game came out and I beat it before the trophies patch was launched.
Same here.
Trophies didn't exist.
Exactly, yeah.
Trophies didn't exist
when Uncharted came out.
I remember, I think it was the following year, or maybe the year after, they finally implemented trophies. And I was like, that's going to be my first platinum. And it was Uncharted 1. If you look at my trophies, first platinum I ever got was Uncharted 1. And I, you know, I replayed it again because I had beaten it before trophies. They weren't even a thing. No one even suspected that, you know? I remember I bought that and whatever Ratchet and Clank game was out for PS3. Those were my first. So those were the games I bought for PS3 when I first got it. I got Uncharted 1, the Ratchet and Clank game, and Assassin's Creed. I didn't say one. I didn't say two. I didn't say Brotherhood. Assassin's Creed, the first one. You know, that's how far back it was. That game obviously blew the fuck up, you know, despite its issues, you know. Not to derail the conversation, but you know how we always talk about, like, oh, the sequel isn't as good as the original. Gaming is one of the few places where the sequel is usually better than the first because they fix all the mechanics, you know. Nowadays, you could kind of argue that, but, like, back in the day, the sequel used to be better than the original because they fixed shit, you know.
They get to address all the issues of the previous one.
Yeah,
I mean
But yeah, anyway, going back to fuck, what were we even talking about? Oh yeah, so yeah, it's about like kind of sticking with games again. I understand where this dude's coming from, but and it may be a case where it's like, hey, if you really believe in this title, maybe you shouldn't abandon it. Maybe you should stick around. But I don't think. Even with No Man's Sky, even though it was barren, you could see the potential. And obviously, you know, Murray's fucking promises, like, yo, if you do that, the game will be dope. And they did. But I think with a game like Concord, they don't really have a good base to build on. I really don't. Yeah,
they don't have it may have nice controls, which I hear a lot of people saying that it does. But I think, again, like, you know, we're in a world of aesthetics. If the game doesn't look good to somebody, then that means that people won't buy it. And I feel like that's the situation here. These characters don't look interesting enough for people to want to invest in this game. You look at a game like the Helldivers, right? Helldivers has a look, and they sort of have like a humor to it, and I think that's what the attraction is on that. Just the plain absurdity of that world, which is essentially Starship Troopers, and I feel like that's what attracted people, because it's like, okay, it's already an absurd kind of crazy world that we're going to dealing with. Let's see what this is all about.
Yeah, it has its own identity.
Armor looks really cool.
Yeah,
and armor looks really cool. It's like, yeah. I think that's what it is. I think, you know, again, you know, what do, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, graphics don't matter, aesthetics don't matter. Yes, they do. They absolutely do. They genuinely do matter. And you have to think about what your public is looking for, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that's the hard lesson there. So,
yeah, and obviously if Sony and the development team feels strong enough about this title to keep supporting it, and all it needs is, you know, to stay supported, then they should do it.
I think about it is that they're going to support it. They're going to support it when it comes out. They're probably not going to, you know, they're probably, the numbers right now, being it's also in a beta, I'm thinking that they're definitely keeping an eye on it, but they can't not release this thing. It's going to get released. It's whoever's already pre-ordered it, they're going to do something. So.
Yeah, I don't.
And it's free, isn't it? Free on PlayStation?
I'm not sure. I know the beta.
Is it going to be a free game on PlayStation?
I honestly don't know.
Plus, one of their plus.
I thought you needed to. Oh, to one of the subscriptions. I don't know.
Yeah, one of the pluses.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No.
Isn't that how you got it?
Not.
Go ahead, Rich.
This is a $40 game, and that was something that people were complaining about. There's no battle pass.
$40 is not apparently. That's $40 is not a bad price. Like, you know,
isn't that what Helldivers went for?
I think Helldivers was a little bit more. Is it 50 or 60?
I think it was. Yeah.
Okay, but you know, $40 isn't bad. So, but yeah, if people aren't willing to pay $40 for it, it sounds like there's something wrong. Just saying. I mean, that's like that's a steal in my book. Hi-Fi Rush is $40. So,
okay. But yeah,
what happened to that?
Yeah, But I don't think this game, even at $40, is going to sell well in the end. I don't think there's a way to market this. I don't think so, man. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they can do to get to if to essentially if they want to attract people, what they could do. You hear a lot of people saying that they really like the design and like yada yada yada. Okay, you like the design, but that seems to be a bit of a minority when it comes to a lot of people when it comes to this game. So.
Hell, thank you, Otaku Man. He goes, the Helldivers was 40.
Yeah, so there you go. $40 game. And not to mention, it did better on PC than it did on PlayStation. Yep.
Yeah, and that's another thing. We don't know how well Concord did on PlayStation. We only know about Steam.
Yeah, we only know about Steam. But these sorts of game, these sort of hero shooter type of games are usually PCs are the place to go where you have that sort of thing. That's Helldivers and stuff like that and Overwatch. What does that tell you? That means that that community is not interested in this game.
Yeah, that's true. Otaku Man says, I think this is the end of the looter shooter trend. The ones that are killing it will continue to thrive. I hope you're right, man. You know, service games in general need to fucking go.
Yeah, the thing about it is it's like that's the secret about. I mean, I'm sure PlayStation paid a bunch of money for it, but I'm sure they didn't pay nearly as much to make Concord as they did to something like an Uncharted or a Last of Us. And yeah, that's the thing. It's like a low yield investment, but and the potential of winning big.
Yeah. All right, man. So that's that. Moving on to more, you know, I guess potentially serious news. Video game voiceover actors are going on strike, people. Specifically over the use of AI in video games. So let me read this real quick. This is from Insider Gaming. Video game voiceover and performance actors are going on strike over the use of AI in video games development, SAG-AFTRA announced. As of 12:01 a.m. on July 26, members of the union will strike after more than 18 months of negotiations between the union and game studios under the Interactive Media Agreement. It was just on July 22nd that the union national director was given authorization to call for an immediate strike after negotiations continue to stall. The sticking point of the current negotiations that ultimately led to the strike were AI protections for voiceover and performance actors. According to members of the negotiating committee, on behalf of the actors, they believe that game studios don't want to protect their actors against the possible exploitation that exists with AI. There you go. And just to tie it in real quick, this is not about artists specifically, voice actors specifically, but another one or story we're about to cover. Activision has reportedly already been using AI to make video games. So, yeah, tell me again that this isn't going to take people's jobs and shit. Go ahead, Chris. I know you want to jump in here.
Well, yeah, I want to understand what their bargaining posture is, because if this is already being leveraged, then coming in with demands that, hey, we need fair competition against this tool, but we also need higher wages, better work conditions, better protections and insurance and all this stuff. And in the meantime, you're, you know, one of these CEOs, you could be Andrew House or whatever. You're listening to this and you're like, I don't have to pay a computer. I could get a sound-alike, right? And I have enough lawyers to fight this. What advantage do I have to give into these demands?
Yeah.
And then pay actors versus just generating voices, you know? So that's the problem, yes. And it is, like you said, like this thing is ramped up. It's has billions of dollars of development. You have huge companies invested in AI, you know, NVIDIA. Look at their stock. Mm-hmm. Look at Microsoft. Microsoft's pouring billions of dollars into OpenAI and other companies. This is not going away. So the thing with the bargaining posture is I don't know where the leverage is. Like, how do you tell the game studios, hey, you can't do this? They're already doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how you stop it.
Yeah. The thing about it is, like, yeah, like, okay, so the issue with it is it's like like, especially like for TV actors, right? There is definitely a bargaining posture in there because you're leveraging famous TV actors and all kinds of stuff like that. So you need, if you want Brad Pitt to be in this thing, you got to get Brad Pitt. But most people don't know who the fuck do the voices of these characters, with the exception of a scant few, right? So what makes them, what secures their job? I mean, obviously they can't, a game studio can't, you know, like a game studio can't use AI to duplicate that person's voice, but that doesn't mean that they can't just essentially, you know, generate a bunch of other voices.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, exactly. When we have a gray area when you say it can't replicate your voice. If you have a voice actor doing a voice that's not their normal one, where's the legal ground fall that, hey, we can have the AI generate this character's voice, which we own, right? We're the company. Yes. We own Aloy or whatever, right? Let's say it's that. Mm-hmm. And Ashley Burch does Aloy. But that's not her normal voice. She doesn't talk like that. So they can go, hey, this AI doesn't sound like you. It doesn't talk like you. You're doing a character. That's our character.
Yeah.
And now we're having this machine generate the voice of that character, which we own. So that's not your voice. There you go. There's a gray area. I don't know how you work around that.
I don't know how you work around that either. Like, in other words, it's like, if you're, but I mean, especially obviously for actors that use their own voices, like you have a lot of actors that pretty much just use the same voice for a lot of their roles, that they definitely have grounds for to take legal action because it's just their voice and they're feeding a script to it. But yeah, like, you know, David Hayter is the voice of Solid Snake, right? Who's to say that, you know, Konami can't just take a, you know, just make a make a Solid Snake sounding voice and just use it as their voice for their games?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, remember when video game actors went on strike before? Were they threatened to?
Yes.
Remember what we said? We said that to video game companies, doesn't matter who the actor is, they're easily replaceable because most players don't care.
Don't know. Right? Yeah.
So, exactly. And the same exact thing applies. I hate to say this, but it's the truth. The same thing applies to AI. Most players will not give a shit. They won't, you know. And here's the thing, and I want to tie this back because Carlos, you brought up NVIDIA. Great point. When I went to CES, right? I went to NVIDIA's booth and I checked out their demo of their like AI NPCs, right? I'm having a conversation with these fucking things, and it was like having a conversation with a regular person. Right. And the technology is only going to get better. You saw what a fucking ChatGPT 4.0, whatever the fuck it's going to be called, did. Like, it's a natural conversation. Right. And then tying this back to like voice replication and stuff. We did an experiment. This is crazy. Right. So one of our AI writer at Tom's Guide, he took a 2-second snippet of my voice, right? Just a recording. He's like, Tony, just say some couple words. Said a couple words. I think he just pulled it from a video that we did. And he had the AI read one of my reviews, right? It sounded like me reading something. Even I'm like, if you would have told me, I'd be like, oh, shit. I read that and I recorded it. This technology is really good. It's only getting better. So if you're a company, why would you bother with actors? Like, Manny, to your point, like, if you're an actor that people see, you have some leverage there. If you're just a voice, you don't have any leverage here, especially when they're already using this shit, you know? Yeah. So I don't think these people are going to win. They don't have the leverage. Nobody, the company's already doing it. Most players don't give a fuck. And the companies are like, why should I pay you guys when I can just generate a voice that's close enough? You know, because obviously they can't use the exact voice because they could stand to be sued. What happened with the whole Scarlett Johansson situation? You got a voice that's close enough, that's fine. But like you guys said, hey, Ashley Burch, that's not your real voice. That's just Aloy that you're doing, you know? So we're just going to use something that's close enough. So this shit's already going to happen. I don't think there's any stopping
this.
But I mean, you know,
I would say the other thing is that if they're going to be using AI voices, it'll probably be for things that are not the main character.
Yeah, you're going to have, I mean, they already talked about this. And
they already talked about
it. They're going to have like a lot of voices for NPCs. But again, my point is there is no stopping them from doing that for main people too. There is no stopping them from doing that. The thing I want to get to is like, I don't think these actors have a leg to stand on. Unfortunately, they don't, you know?
Like you said, if it's an actor like Norman Reedus, who's a well-known actor who you're getting a full performance from, you know, that won't affect somebody like him. If Kojima wants Norman Reedus, he wants Norman Reedus in his game. So, but you know, again, like you have other actors, the people, you know, people that nobody's ever seen or nobody knows by, you know, barely knows by name, who just have the voice. How do you stop it?
There's a thing that it's already happens, and Manny knows this. So an actor does of what, you know, a character, right? Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark, right? You're not going to pay him to do an animated feature, right? Or a TV series, right?
Yeah.
Or Iron Man. So what do? You hire a sound alike. Guy sounds like. Yeah. Kind of like him. It's kind of doing his mannerisms and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not him, right? So they're like, they could argue, well, we're already doing that. We hire sound-alikes. The AI is now your sound-alike, right? It's 25% different from your voice, but it's doing the mannerisms, and it's this character. I don't know how you negotiate around that.
Yeah, they have nothing to stand on. And again, the AI is so fucking good now that's almost indistinguishable with voices and stuff, you know? Like, not to get into the political realm here, but even big tech websites are like, hey, you know that Colin Biden did? Sounded like AI. I wouldn't be surprised. Thousands and thousands of hours and shit. Think about it. They could do that to anybody on this podcast. We have thousands of hours of us talking. You could easily replicate us, you know? So you don't think they're going to be able to do that with like voices and shit? Again, it's already happening. The actors don't have a leg to stand on. I don't think you're going to win. You're gonna have the big time actors on their side, but most gamers, don't give a fuck, you know.
Yeah. Also, as far as the big time actors, like even the voice people said when it came down to like the SAG portion of it, when they were doing that big strike before, you know, and the voice actors went on strike too, they had to fight for their own shit.
Yeah.
Because the famous actors, they got what they wanted, but that doesn't affect all the voice actors that do animation. They need to fight their own shit. So, that's a hard one because, again, you're a bunch of miscellaneous people that nobody knows the name of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
We're going to have Nolan North and Troy Baker get sympathy votes from the people, and they're going to be like,
how dare you take away our monopoly? But then you take some of the voice actors that people sort of know that have been in some things, right? You know, like you have the guy who played Master Miller, right, in Metal Gear, right? You have, you know, I can't remember his name. He played it in Metal Gear Solid V. He was in a popular show. The, you know, a couple of the other guys, you know, like the guy who plays, not Matt Mercer, but he would be one of the more well known. Like if you had a bunch of those well known names going out there, like doing that sort of stuff, because their performances are the ones that people sort of recognize, then you can possibly have something. But yeah, like it's not like you're all, and we said this the last time, them going on, the actors going on strike doesn't mean anything. When a big studio can just go non-guild, there is no contracts. They only adhere to the contracts because they want to use specific actors. But there's nothing in the game industry that says that they need to use people in SAG. And for years, they've used people from Canada who are not part of the Screen Actors Guild. You know, they get you paid cheaper for those actors. In Japan, in previous years, they used to just use whatever American actors still lived in the United in Japan to do the voiceovers for their games. You know, hence the weird stilted talking in Resident Evil.
Yeah.
So there's nothing. Yeah.
You know, Manny, isn't it by state? Like California has strict union laws, but New York doesn't. There's up. Yeah, the studios are all over the place.
Yeah. For instance, the unions in, especially for the animators union, which they're also going. Thing, but yeah, they have especially for the animation industry, the union is a lot stronger in California than it's stronger than it is in like the East Coast, and you know, but for actors, their union's is recognized by pretty much the United States itself, but that doesn't mean that you can't go to another country and get something else that happened, or go like Power Rangers was a non-guild show, you know? So there's nothing that says, the only thing that says is that only non-guild actors can, guild actors can't work on a non-guild show. So let's say for the sake of conversation, the guy from, Breaking Bad. He was on Power Rangers at one point Bryan Cranston was on it, but he did a lot of anime voices, which the anime industry was all non-guild shows. They were all made in Canada. They were all not done outside of the Screen Actors Guild, which meant that they don't get any residuals, and that's the big thing.
Yeah, so you guys just lay down a bunch of examples of how these companies have always tried to skirt things to save money. You think they're not going to do that with AI? You absolutely fucking would, and have, So this is
it sucks that sort of situation is sort of inevitable, because it's like you want people to you want people to be able to work, Like I even said, in our many conversations with Brett, it's like those sorts of positions, it kind of cuts a lot of work for people. Like, there are a lot of actors that, they've obviously done some well-known characters, but they've also been able to take side little smaller jobs, like just doing grunts and groans for background guys.
Yeah.
Right. So, but now you could pretty much get you have some sort of samples of something, you can literally just create these background voices, and you don't need to have them, there anymore. It sucks that those sorts of positions. So what does the future look like for video game acting? I definitely think, if the company is still wants to, depends on the company, but I think if they still will probably go with, having performance, performance capture and doing, voice stuff in the beginning, for the main characters. But I definitely think a lot of the background stuff is all going to get cut out.
Yeah, which is a problem because, a lot of, the big name actors that now, they had their start doing little roles like that, so if you cut that out, it's an issue, but, it's a problem, man. And I want to jump to this next story because it's related to this, right? Because it's not just going to stop with voice acting, and I'm reading this off of Games Radar. Activision Blizzard is reportedly already making games with AI and quietly sold an AI-generated microtransaction in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Fun times!
Wow.
All right, so let me read this because I kind of know about this, but I don't know the full details. Activision Blizzard, among other big-name video game companies, is reportedly already using generative AI to create some of the world's biggest games. Generative AI has been a scalding hot topic for over a year now, with developers from across the industry speaking out against the tool's potentially harmful impact on job security, human creativity, and the ways it could be used to make unquestionably unethical content like deepfake porn mods. Yep, that's happening. But a new report from Wired paints a picture of an industry that has already quietly accepted the technology, at least in some major AAA studios. Speaking of Wired, one anonymous source who once worked at the Call of Duty publisher claims that the company promised generative AI would not only be used for concept art and other materials that wouldn't make their way into the full game. However, the article claims that by the end of the year, Activision was already selling AI-generated skins in Call of Duty Modern Warfare via the Yokai's Wrath bundle. So think about it. They said, no, we're not going to do this. Then by the end of the year, they were fucking doing it.
I'm going to say this. Go ahead.
Oh, actually, real quick, because I kind of have a feeling what you're going to say, and this is just going to nail the point home what you're going to say. Another anonymous source told the site that a lot of 2D artists were laid off as part of Microsoft's wider cuts, which left almost 2,000 employees out of a job. So here's the quote. Remaining concept artists were then forced to use AI to aid their work. The source continues and have since been made to sign up for training sessions on how to use AI tools. That's because, for now, 2D art assets are easier for AI to conjure up, meaning concept artists, illustrators, graphic designers, and more jobs are all at higher risk. Go ahead.
Yep. Well, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It's easier if you train the, you know, you get people to sign training model, contracts. Yeah, they're going to do it. So
yeah. I want to keep reading. This is fucking insane. I would say
the thing is what they'll do is they'll make sure that they have an art director sort of being like, okay, this is not what we want. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Half the environment art team was also cut from the Overwatch 2 team, according to former Blizzard artist Lucas Annunziata. I remember him at the time, though it's unclear if the talented artist working on the hero shooter had the same AI mandate, too. As the Wired
investigation.
I don't think so. But the fact that they're telling people you got to take this, that's disturbing, man. It's instead of, like, you know, going in there with your talent as an artist, now you got to be a fucking prompt writer effectively, you know? As the Wired investigation notes, none of the developers who came forward were in favor of using generative AI. The push to use the technology almost always comes from the executive level, who see the cheaper cost and good enough art as acceptable. Rachel Cross, a one-time concept artist at Riot Games, told the site that the AI problem is emblematic of a much larger issue around the way game workers are treated. After looking at the endless list of mass layoffs and studio closures in recent months, it would be hard to argue with her. True. And here's the last part here. Thankfully, video game studios across the industry are unionizing. Starfield and the Elder Scrolls 6 makers at Bethesda Game Studios created one of the largest cross-department unions in the game industry just last week. The Writers Guild of America successfully combated the issue last year when it organized to make sure Hollywood studios couldn't use AI without a screenwriter's permission. But again, that last part may not apply well to the video game actors. But yeah, again, this whole report doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me at all. These companies will do whatever is in quote unquote their best interest to save money, you know, even if it means laying off a shit ton of people. And it's interesting because, remember, we've been talking about these layoffs all year, right? And we kind of always came at it from the, and I don't think we were wrong in doing this. We came at it from the perspectives like they hired a shit ton of people during the pandemic when the good times are rolling for the video game industry. And now, you know, the come down happened when people aren't buying as much shit. But the whole AI aspect seems to be part of the layoffs, too. Why keep all these people around when you could just have one or two people do the same shit? You know, it's disturbing, man.
Especially, if you, for a hyper realistic game like a Call of Duty, you know, like you're pretty much just, you have your concepts. You have years of concept design that are done by the same people. So As long as you're training a model that's using internal work, there you go. That's what's happening.
Yeah. Concord looks like it was made by AI. I don't know if it was made by AI. The concept, the designs do look very generic.
I would say they're generic, but I wouldn't say that they're AI designed. But yeah. if you notice a lot of the stuff they said they quietly used used it to sell a skin. That was still, you know, so it means that they're probably using it in spaces that are essentially like low yield sort of things, right? In other words, it's not the main skin. It's not something like, in other words, the Gundam skin has to be designed, right? Because it's a Gundam skin. But for something like if they're doing like a themed skin thing, that's what they're doing. They're like taking like, okay, yeah, we need to fill out this thing. So we'll Japanese design, blah, 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 blah. Okay, do that, you know. But definitely a sort of scary world. I made a tweet about this a while ago because of, just the way Instagram is now, where essentially, you know, anything that you post onto their service, they're using to train AI models.
Yeah.
In the background. You know, same thing with something like a Facebook. So it's like, it makes me, it's like, what's the point of posting everything, posting your work on there when it's just going to get rated? And every single time you post something, it creates a, you know, essentially the model for you becomes even stronger and stronger. So it doesn't benefit you at all.
Yeah. I'm just looking through the comments here. First up, Jay Shep goes, but do unions protect them from anything? There's some protection, but yeah. I don't know, man.
It depends on what the union, what kind of contracts that they signed, But the thing about it is, like, yeah, like, if you remember, there are no unions in the video game industry.
Yeah, there's you know? There's some people. There's some, like, again, Microsoft got one for Activision Blizzard, I believe it was. But but it's not a thing. Some WoW developers, have a union now, but it's not a normal thing. Those are outliers, no. You know?
Well, the thing about it is that the big companies don't want that.
Yeah, they don't want that.
That in the games industry and in the effects industry, mm-hmm. they don't want unions. Same thing in the tech industry. They don't want unions. Because they don't want anybody to have any sort of leverage. And the problem with that, a lot of that stuff is that with going, you know, with trying to establish some sort of union, there's always going to be people that are going to cross the line. So, okay, let's say a whole company's developer team, the dev team decides they're going to go off on strike. Who's to stop Activision or somebody else or EA to go, okay, hire a bunch of kids out of school who want a chance, you know, in the industry, and then just replace all those roles.
Yeah. By the way, Segway Kings, because that's the other story I have here. World of Warcraft developers form Blizzard's largest and most inclusive union. Over 500 employees have organized across multiple departments, creating the first wall-to-wall union of its kind at the studio. So, yeah, there are instances where this is happening, but it's very rare, you know? Bob Hitz, is there a podcast union?
But I mean, no. But I mean, the thing about unions is they also don't stop layoffs.
Yeah, they don't.
So yeah, you could totally have a union. It just means that there's at least a bargaining table on there. But that doesn't mean that they can't just get rid of those people.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know. Let me read this.
Like so, in like Manny, it. Yeah. In like the way the old unions work is that all of them have signed like the film industry have all signed contracts that they have to use these people that are a part of this union, and they can't go outside of that union. That's why the Screen Actors Guild and the Writers Guild and the Directors Guild are all so powerful the way they are. You can't be and a director cannot be. Screen Actors Guild director can't work on a show that doesn't have other guild people in it. But in other industries, like especially other entertainment industries like video games and you know, special effects and stuff like that, they don't have that. The last one to have that is the Animators Union. And the Animators Union only has power in the state that they're in. So Blizzard, obviously, they created their little union, but doesn't Blizzard have multiple studios? So there's a good chance that they could have a union in one studio, but not in another, just depending on the state that they're in, and that mm-hmm. if that union is recognized by that state.
Yeah. Anyway, let me read this real quick. Yeah, more than 500 developers at Blizzard Entertainment who work on World of Warcraft have voted to form a union. The World of Warcraft Game Makers Guild, formed with the assistance of the Communication Workers of America, is composed of employees across every department, including designers, engineers, artists, producers, and more. Together, they have formed the largest wall-to-wall union, or a union inclusive of multiple departments and disciplines at Microsoft. This news comes less than a week after the formation of the Bethesda Game Studios union, which at the time of the announcement was itself the largest wall-to-wall Microsoft union. So Microsoft now has two of these unions there, two video game specific unions. Interesting. Yeah, again, unions could They could give you some protections, but you're right. They do not protect you from layoffs. They don't do
they
that.
They don't protect you. No. They don't protect you from layoffs, but they do have a bargaining posture if they're you know, if they're trying to bring something to the bargaining table for multiple people. Definitely having multiple people, you know, having there's definitely power in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, if they all decided to walk off and go off on strike, that means that all work on their game stops. But and obviously a company can't replace all those roles that quickly. If all of your guys all decided to walk off, how do you fill that in? If it's just a couple of people walking off and doing it, get rid of Bill because he walked off the job and replace him with Jimmy from college.
Yeah, crazy stuff, man.
But I mean, I noticed something. So there is a World of Warcraft union. Where's the Overwatch union?
Yeah.
You see what I mean about this? This is not a company-wide union. It's only one game union.
Yeah. Well, they said it's from multiple different places in Microsoft.
It says multiple multiple departments. So the departments they mentioned was concept. They were talking about modeling. They're talking about all the things that go into making World of Warcraft. So they have a specific union for World of Warcraft itself. But that doesn't cover Blizzard itself. It's just one part of Blizzard.
Yeah. So it's interesting how they're having these like bifurcated unions, it seems, within Microsoft.
Yes.
Which, and if you're divided like that, you're not really going to have a lot of power, you know?
But I mean, I'm guessing the reason why the World of Warcraft team has a leverage is because they continue to generate money. And if they stopped, you know, running World of Warcraft, that you can't imagine how much money that Microsoft or, you know, Blizzard would lose if they did walk off.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Wild stuff, man. All right, moving on here. Now we're shifting gears completely. I kind of didn't want to talk about this, but we kind of have to talk about this. This is pretty big.
We're talking about Bruno.
I don't know who that is.
It's a joke. It's a Dizzy joke. Don't worry about it.
Okay. We got to talk about Assassin's Creed Shadows.
What's going on now?
Okay, so you know the controversy that's been going on with having one of the main characters, Yasuke, contested samurai or not. And we did touch on this before, Japan not very happy about this. The Japanese players not very happy about this. So Ubisoft this week they issued a quote-unquote apology for upsetting Japanese players, but it was kind of a non-apology at the same time.
But before you say what it is, is it a "we're sorry you feel that way"?
Kind of, yeah. I'm looking at this and nothing in here talks about how they plan to fix this, you know? It's like, oh, we're sorry, we didn't mean to upset you. We do our research, like nonsense. Did you? Yeah.
Did you?
I kind of don't want to read it. Their statement was such BS, I'll read this part. It's called Creative Liberties and Historical Inspirations. He goes, "While we strive for authenticity in everything that we do, Assassin's Creed games are works of fiction inspired by real historical events and figures. From its inception, the series has taken creative license and incorporated fantasy elements to craft engaging and immersive experiences. The representation of Yasuke in our game is an illustration of this. His unique and mysterious life made him an ideal candidate to tell an Assassin's Creed story with the setting of feudal Japan as a backdrop. While Yasuke is depicted as a samurai in Assassin's Creed Shadows, we acknowledge that this is a matter of debate and discussion. We have woven this carefully into our narrative and with our other lead character, the Japanese shinobi Naoe, who is equally important in the game. Our dual protagonists provide players with different gameplay styles." But again, you're not really saying much here, you know?
Well, I mean, they said they're saying exactly what we thought they were going to say. you know, what we've been saying. They said exactly what we said about Yasuke. They used the fact that he's mysterious to sort of create this sort of, you know, to essentially put this character in, which is fine. You know, that's, you know, there's quite a bit of character, like you adding some importance to another character. That's fine, whatever. That is not the thing that they have issue with. The thing that they have issue with is how the representation of their culture in general. How is it that you're using a Naruto sword for promotion? How is it that your translation that's, you know, of Japanese that's on a box is wrong? That's the issue.
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, if you're
doing, like, you look at a situation like Ghost of Tsushima, right? You know, obviously there are inaccuracies within that game. You know, the what they call the katana, because the katana didn't exist, but has one. That stuff was fine. But, you know, in the Japanese one, they actually do call it the proper name, but it's still a katana that he has, right? There's things that they're obviously liberties that they took in there, but with how careful they were about doing this. And there obviously was a little bit of pushback by the Japanese in the beginning. But when they finally played the damn thing or saw into it,
Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch really did their research, but it's telling that Ubisoft, despite their despite what research that they have said they did, they didn't do a lot, because there's a lot of, because you have a lot of Japanese people poking giant holes in the inaccuracies of it. The thing is, if you're doing it right, if you do it right, the Japanese are like, yes, you're representing us right, even if there are inaccuracies. And that's what they always will say. They're like, sure, you can take what we've done, but as long as, you know, take our culture and, you know, apply it to things. But as long as you're doing us right, we're fine with it.
Yeah. Carlos, you go next, but I want to read some of these comments here. J-Shep says, many of the Japanese gamers' complaints aren't about race. It's more culturally related. J-Shep,
exactly,
and then Blitz says, the other issues are around things like Chinese characters and promotional material and a flag that's not actually correct. He goes, and J-Shep goes, like bowing to strangers and going through the streets just killing people. Okay, apparently people didn't like that. But go ahead, Carlos. What were you gonna say, man?
Yeah, I was gonna mention that, you know, and Manny mentioned the example with Sucker Punch and Ghost of Tsushima. A lot of Japanese folks are really sort of territorial about, you know, who tells their history, because I guess they're scared that their history is gonna get, you know, either shitted on or disinformation is gonna go on, or a whole retelling of their history that they're not going to be satisfied with. That's why there was this huge backlash with Ghost of Tsushima in the beginning, because they didn't want, you know, them to misinterpret whatever the hell they were trying to do until they did a good job. And with this, it's sort of kind of the same thing. The only thing I will say is the whole thing is exacerbated because, and let's just be real here, it's a black protagonist.
Yeah.
One way or the other, it's going to get so many more different eyes and different types of conversations going that are going to add to the original conversation that would have taken place, whether it would have been a male Japanese protagonist.
Yeah, and I think Ubisoft knew that, and they did that on purpose, because they, you know, it generates interest, for the lack of a better term, you know.
Here's the thing, like, I think in general it's an interesting idea. You know, like, you know, it's been done. Like, there was an adaptation, an anime set of adaptation. Again, Yusuke, again, he's a samurai or Ronin in it. Like, that one didn't come under fire for the plain reason is because it was done by a Japanese, you know, was directed by a Japanese, and was also, you know, had, you know, LaShawn Thomas involved. I feel like in general, like, if you're going to play it, just and what, you know, our listeners just said it, it's, yeah, it's not the Yusuke thing that's the issue, the biggest issue. That's not the Yasuke issue that's the biggest issue. The biggest issue is everything that's around Yasuke.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting stuff. But
if they did their due diligence and they really dealt, like, you know, maybe the reason why you know, the Sucker Punch was able to get this is because of the Japanese connection of Sony itself. They're partial. They're, you know, the biggest arm of Sony is the Japanese arm. So they can definitely get in touch with the right people to be like, no, this is wrong, this is right. We got to do this. We got to do that. Yeah. So I definitely think that's the big thing. Like, what's around Yosuke has to be approved upon. You know, not you know. Again, we get it. We get Assassin's Creed plays fast and loose with history. They made up a fucking half Native American guy, and he helped George Washington.
Yeah.
We get it. You know, we know it's fantasy land, but the world around their fantasy land seems authentic, and I think that's what that's the whole point.
Yeah.
You ever, here's the thing. Like when you see these guys, Ubisoft coming out, right? They don't have any. Like, if you remember with all the promotion for Ghost of Tsushima, they literally had Japanese historians show up and talk about the game. You know, I think that's the thing. The big difference is you're just a bunch of gaijin saying we do our research. Whereas in Ghost of Tsushima, they're actually showing, okay, no, we got this really famous Japanese historian to sort of consult on this project, as well as other people, as you know, swordsmiths and all kinds of other people to do this. The long story short, it sounds like Ubisoft was very much right when it came to, you know, making an Assassin's Creed game in Japan.
Yeah.
You know?
They should have done it.
and that's one of the contradicting things that they mentioned in their statement. They said, we wanted to make this game for a long time, when a long time ago they said they didn't want to make this game.
They said they would never do it. Isn't that a big change of heart, you know?
Yeah, and that's a big change of heart. And then the whole thing with, part of the statement that I did not like is they mentioned, we have all of these all this research from these Japanese historians to make the setting 100% or not 100%, but historically accurate. It's like, no, why? If you're gonna go loose with the history, just go loose with everything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, put robots in it. You know.
Yeah, put robots in it. Put something else. It's just, you know,
that's zombies or whatever. That's what they did with the Yosuke show that was on Netflix. They went like full, like, you know, robots and, you know, werewolves and all kinds of other crazy things. Because it's like, you know, we're already in fantasy land here, so let's just really go for broke.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. Yeah.
But I think the one thing about Assassin's Creed, and this is from the previous games, those games felt like that they had a fair amount of good research.
Yeah.
When they were created, like, to the point where they said that in order to reconstruct the Notre Dame, they used the scans from Ubisoft.
Yep.
That they did. So I'm saying, like, okay, that's the research that you did for that game. What's going on with this game? And how come these supposed historians haven't come to bat for this game? And are these legitimately Japanese historians, or are these just like, you know, a Western historian, you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know there's one historian. I don't know his nationality, but apparently he has been accused of making up stuff about Yosuke. So this whole thing's very messy.
Oh, is that the white guy, right?
I'm not sure. It could be, but I don't want to say one way or another. But this person, this dude has been accused of making up stuff for years about Yosuke, exaggerating. So take that how you will. Yeah, go ahead, Carlos.
Getting cultural stuff correct is important. I think it was Far Cry 3 where they had Maori people in the game, and it caused outrage due to tattoo designs, which used to be obviously linked to the Maori culture. And then he says, just outrage from little old New Zealand, not as loud as outrage from Japan.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's true, yeah. Some wild stuff, man. Yeah. The historian is Jeff Keighley. That's funny.
Jeff Keighley. Like, I think the thing is that, like, when you get it right, like, I feel like when you get something right, like, definitely, you know, represent the culture the way you know, like the right way, I think they people won't have any issues. But yeah, like yeah, with that situation where like, well, you have Maori tattoos that they probably just looked online, right? You know, and made up something. They didn't get a real Maori like tattoo artist to do the specific designs for these characters, you know. That now you have that sort of issue, and I think that's the same situation here. I think they just did a bunch of research on, maybe did a little bit of research on online, maybe got a couple of historians that lived in Canada, Quebec, and called it a day, as opposed to literally legitimately getting somebody from over there being like, okay, so what is it about Yasuke, and how can we weave Yasuke? If we what really want to include this character in there, what ways can we use to sort of weave him through history, right? And I think that's just like Jin Sakai, right? Jin Sakai didn't exist,
yeah.
But they weaved him into some real events that happened.
Yeah,
Assassin's Creed sort of way.
Yep, that's the way they used to do it. Everything around the character and their story actually happened, you know, and even a lot in the early Assassin's Creed games, a lot of the guys you kill are actually real people that died under mysterious circumstances. We gave them that wiggle room, you know. So, and that's what they again trying to do with Yasuke. It's like there's enough wiggle room with this guy, you know. And again, it could be a case of maybe like Ghost of Tsushima, there's some backlash from the Japanese players. Then they play the game and they're like, oh, you know, this ain't that bad as I thought. But we'll have to see. But the fact that they had to issue an apology, very interesting, you know. Sucker Punch didn't issue an apology. They just released the game. It's like, here you go.
Well, no, I mean, I think a lot they spent a lot of time attempting to sell Japan on this on the work that they were doing. Like, you if you look, there's quite a bit of little mini documentaries that they did.
Yeah,
they had a historian, they had Shuhei Yoshida talking about, like, you know, what things were, you know, with him, with them too, you know. So it's like, I think that's the sort of thing that they need to do. They need to sort of showcase the research that they did and pretty much sell it to Japan, you know. Like, be like, okay, well, this is what we're doing. These are the people that are involved. And I think that's that. And then again, really being careful about that stuff. Because again, that's the same. That was the thing that surprised people in Japan about Ghost of Tsushima. How close it was.
Yeah.
For a Western studio. Because obviously, you know, those guys over there, you know, were really big fans of samurai movies. Samurai movies are like, you know, it's like basing if you only based it on a samurai film, then you're not getting the full picture. And that's why they did that. It seems like they went in and had somebody from over there involved in the process of creating this game. And then they also went in and got a bunch of well-known Japanese actors to play, you know, voice actors known in in Japan, like, you know, the guy who plays Solid Snake, you know, to play characters, you know, in the game.
Yeah.
So, you know.
All right, man. So that's that. And the last story of the night, this one is a funny one. Mr. Larry Herb, Major Nelson himself. You know, he left, you know, Xbox a while ago. What company does he work for now? I forgot who he works for now.
Oh, he works for
was it Unity?
Unity.
Yeah, he's on Unity now.
He's on Unity. Yeah. Anyway, so
he's doing image repair at Unity.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh. Anyway, so earlier this week, Xbox, you know, the blog which he used to write a lot, you know, they put out, like, you know, a trailer for Call of Duty, and he retweeted it saying, "Hey, you guys forgot to post the link to the blog post in your trailer, so I'm going to do it for you."
He's like, "I'll pick up the slack."
Yeah, this is what he goes. "They really should include a link to the blog post for those who want to read about it. Since they did not, I will pick up the slack." Man, yo.
He's throwing a slap across their face. It's like they're already fucking up.
Yeah.
My seat's not even done being warm, you know, from getting up out of it, and you're already fucking up.
Yeah. So I'm going to read some of the replies here. Some guy goes, you came out of retirement. He goes, I jump in to fill in when I can. Another guy goes, old habits are hard to get rid of. He goes, facts. And then he goes, and another person goes, sucks seeing your replacement do a worse quality job after leaving. He goes, they didn't replace me, which is true. They haven't replaced them. You know,
they haven't replaced them.
Yeah.
So the seats is the seat is open. He's just gone.
Yeah.
He wait, that sounds a bit piffy, don't it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I
they
I
didn't
called
replace this. Me.
He goes, they never replaced me. Yeah. Go ahead, Carlos. Mm-hmm.
I call this the day it happened. Where Larry Herb was, there was an announcement. It was like, oh, like he decided to step down or semi-retire. I forgot what the news was actually. But it's like, oh no, this dude got let go.
Mm-hmm.
He just got the courteous let go, where he's like, you can say that you wanted to leave, and you can mm-hmm. you can really tell, because this is some spicy what do you call it, god damn it, I forgot the word. But you know, he's getting back at his old company.
Yeah, he is.
There's some animosity.
I mean,
in there.
I definitely feel like, you know, he did a lot of work on original Xbox, trying to you know give an image to it, try to give to the fans, like, you know, Adam, if when he was on the, you know, Adam would tell you if he was here that he would always be really personable. He was always about trying to get, you know, essentially get people involved and get people to, you know, to really enjoy this thing. It seemed like he was very much involved in it, and it's like, okay, they pretty much gave him the window seat with that role that he sort of had when he was doing the blog stuff and doing those things. So it's like now they've just got rid of it totally.
Yeah, so kind of funny stuff there, you know. I enjoyed seeing Larry just doing this thing, even though he's not working for Xbox. Oh,
well,
man.
I mean, the old habits die hard, but it's like, you guys got to get your shit in order. Like, he's like, I'm not here, but guys, you have all these different things in here. You have a blog site that essentially goes into detail as to what this thing is. Why the fuck aren't you, posting the blog site so people can read about this fucking product? You fucking wake up, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, man, that's going to do it for us. Another show in the books, people. Manny, do you have anything to plug?
Yes. So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1 is now on. Just came out this week on Wednesday. So this was the big relaunch of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles IDW versions. So they got me and Kari Randolph to do a cover for that. Funny thing is, I think we did this cover before we did the Ninja Turtles 40th anniversary. Very interesting. You'd be very interesting to see how comics are created. You know, sometimes you could just end up doing something a week before it's due, or they'll drop something really crazy on you, or you'll have a lot of lead time. Hmm. And that was one of them. So yeah, that's out on the shelves right now. I think our cover is pretty easy to find. IDW, I don't know exactly how their releases are when it comes to special covers, but some of the covers tend to be ones that are very sought after. And I think our cover from the cover that me and Kari did for the 40th anniversary is a bit hard to find, but I don't know the status of this one. But you know, keep an eye on your, you know, if you go to your comic shops or anything like that, keep an eye on that sort of stuff to see if they have it available, or you can get it online. You can get a digital version of it. So yeah, that's out right now.
Yeah. Okay, you answered Foolish Pupil's question. He was asking, where can we grab the cover?
Yeah, you can pick it up on, you probably can pick it up on IDW's site. They do have a store there. You can also pick up the, you know, again, go to your comic book store. You know, you can just look on the shelves and see it there. There's a couple of comic book stores that are like Midtown Comics, not a plug to them, but they do have online orders where you can order there. They're in New York, but you can online, you can buy pretty much anywhere in the United States. It's weird. Comic book stores don't have a big online presence. You can almost count on your fingers how many comic book stores have actual online stores. They really need to get on the ball on those.
Yeah,
anyway,
kind of weird.
Especially since comic book stores in general are difficult to find. You know, some neighborhoods don't have any. Anyway, yeah, those are the multiple ways that you can do it. Just check it out. Look it up.
There you go. And Rich, what's going on with the coalition?
Yeah, so two quick things to plug. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Gary actually has been playing Marvel Rivals, so we are going to have some thoughts on that game pretty soon. I will stay tuned to thecoalition.com as well as the Coalition Gaming channel because, yeah, there will be much said about that in the future. And one other thing, there is this little movie that is coming out tomorrow. Some independent film. I don't know. Maybe you guys have heard of it called Deadpool Wolverine.
Yeah. Some people have already seen it. They're on Twitter right now talking about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had to avoid Twitter. I'm going to see the movie tomorrow. Gary's going to see it over the weekend. So there might be some discussion in the future regarding this movie. I would just say stay tuned. We will obviously communicate this and let you guys know if we record a discussion. But yeah, that's something to look forward to. And outside of that, just stay tuned to thecoalition.com. There's going to be quite a bit of things happening in August that we're going to be covering on the website. So yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, August, yeah. All I'm going to say is stay tuned, people, for both the Coalition and Throwdown. And Rich and I may have some experiences to share. But so I'm going to leave with it. That's all I'm going to leave with it. You know, if Adam was here, he'd just spoil it and shit.
He'd blab it all over the place.
You know, but yeah, August, you know, because usually August is kind of a slow month for gaming. This summer's a little bit hot, you know. We, you know, Wukong's coming. PAX West is coming, you know, so things may be happening. So stay tuned, man. Stay tuned. All right, we're done here. So make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join the Discord. The conversations, the rumors are always popping. You could also find us on any podcast app on the planet. Throwdown Show. That's two words, Throwdown Show. Throwdownshow.com to listen to best episodes. And if you're watching us on YouTube and like the video, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when we go live, people. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
And Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right, you already know. And no mop hits. None of us are going to San Diego Comic-Con. So,
shout out for the bits.
Yeah, shout out for the bits. So, yeah, thank you for that. But some of us may be going to New York Comic-Con. You know, Manny, I don't know if you're going to be there this year. But
no,
you know,
I would have made an announcement about that
one. Yeah, but I will. I'll be there, you know, press and all that good jazz. I'll probably see Dana there. She'll get mad at me for whatever reason. Dana's always mad at me for something.
I know this one. I know what this is going to be.
Yeah, boycott. Barry Bird, there you go. Boycott. You know, Barry, you know, boycott NYCC. But, you know, I'll see you there, too. Every year with this guy, you know? Every year with this guy. I'm not going. Not going this year. Motherfucker's always there.
He's like, I tried to get out, but they keep on pulling me back.
Yeah, man. All right, good stuff. Anyway, we'll see you guys on Sunday. Later.
Laters.
Laters.